Overseeing Action for Lumber v. United States. Okay, Mr. Leonard, why are counsel for the same side dividing the argument? I'm not sure that our rules permit that.
As I understand, the rules permit two counsel, excuse me, from different firms to represent or to present arguments.
We don't have the rules in front of us, so why don't you go ahead? But there's only going to be one rebuttal.
Correct, yeah.
All right, go ahead.
That's all we're seeking. I'm here with Ed Lebow of Haynes Boone, who reserved 1 minute, and we'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. Just me. We represent, or we're arguing on behalf of three government parties with institutional interests in expedited reviews, and seven private parties that demonstrated in expedited reviews that they were not subsidized and should be excluded from the countervailing duty order on softwood lumber from Canada. This case is about how Congress expressly incorporated parts of the Statement of Administrative Action by reference into the Uruguay Round Agreements Act and authorized Commerce, in Section 103 to issue regulations implementing expedited reviews. The relevant language of the SAA is on page 28 and 29 of our opening brief, and the relevant text of Section 103A and B are on the bottom half of page 24 of our opening brief.
Where's the relevant part of the SAA, quote?
The relevant part is on page 28 and 29 of our opening brief. Expedited reviews arose...
Wait a minute.
Sure.
I would have thought that the relevant part of the SAA was subsection G about implementing regulations.
Of the SAA, it's section B5, which talks about expedited reviews. It's actually titled...
Are you familiar with G?
I don't have it presently in my mind. I could have my colleague pull it up and look at it for me.
What it says is the administrator will endeavor to amend or issue the regulations required to implement U.S. obligations under the Uruguay Round Agreements as soon as practical. Section 103A of the bill provides the authority for such new or amended regulations to be issued. Mm-hmm. Well, why doesn't that tell us something that's relevant here?
Well, it does tell us something relevant that similar to...
It seems like... Sort of like the language in Best Foods.
Exactly. It's in Best Foods, the implementing legislation for the NAFTA provided authority to issue regulations. And this court found that in that case, the NAFTA Implementing Act talked about some statutory changes that were required, but also anticipated that that some provisions would be implemented through regulation only. And the same is the case here.
Can I just ask, I was not able entirely to tell, but it didn't look to me like in Best Foods or whatever the earlier name of the company was, actually ever disputed the authority under the, 3311 in that case,
mm-hmm.
the counterpart, or 3313, the counterpart of the one here, that was even a disputed issue.
That it provided
in the court.
That section provided authority to issue regulations.
I don't remember seeing an argument from Best Foods that it didn't, that authority was missing because that's not a proper interpretation of the equivalent of our 103A.
Right. Best Foods argued that because the NAFTA Implementation Act didn't include statutory changes allowing a change in the country of origin methodology, that the agency couldn't do it by regulation, similar to the arguments here.
I'm not sure that's similar to the arguments here. Did anybody say, when you read 103A, you can't properly incorporate something contemplated in the SAA as a providing authorization for the new regulation?
I believe that's what the coalition is arguing, but I'll let them explain their argument.
I'm getting a little bit confused. I thought in Best Foods that the language that authorized the issuance of regulations to comply with international obligations wasn't actually part of the statute. It wasn't just in the SAA. Am I correct about that?
Yes, in that the Implementation Act provided authority to issue regulations, but it's actually the country of origin methodology language was in Annex 311 of the NAFTA and wasn't specifically referenced in the Implementation Act or anywhere in the statutes.
The idea of authorizing regulations to bring the United States into compliance with international obligations was something that was specifically in the statute, whereas here it seems to be only in the SAA and not in the statutory language itself. Now, maybe you say we should interpret 103A in accordance with the SAA to permit that, but it does seem to me somewhat different.
There are two parts of 103. A talks about regulations that are necessary to implement the URAA, and 103B specifically references the SAA. 103B...
B doesn't do much for me. I mean, I think if you're going to find it, it's got to be in A.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of A, we read that...
I'm sorry, if only because whatever the SAA did, it did not in fact propose this as a measure that it was going to take where it was proposing other things for the reason the CIT said. That's a hurdle for you.
Respectfully, we disagree with the CIT. In the SAA, we're looking at Section B5. And Section B states, or is titled... action required or appropriate to implement the agreement.
Can you give a page number, please?
Sure, that's in our brief.
Do you actually have the SAA page number?
I have the 1994 USCAN. It's at 4237.
Okay. I don't have that.
Or it's page, my colleague will pull it up.
But in your brief?
So this is, while he's looking up the page in the brief, this section B then has subsection B5, which is company-specific subsidy rates and expedited reviews. And this, the first part, company-specific subsidy rates, refers to the change from the pre-URAA countrywide rates, which were investigated on an aggregate basis countrywide, and a countrywide rate was provided. And the URAA shifted that preference to company-specific rates. Section B5...
Okay, but let's put aside 103B for the moment. Let's talk about 103A. Mm-hmm. The portion of the SAA that I read seems to say 103A provides the authority to issue regulations to bring the United States in compliance with international obligations. But even if that tells us how to construe 103A, it doesn't tell us whether the provision of the treaty that you're relying on in fact requires these not individually investigated entities to get this expedited review when they're not new shippers.
Right, well, 103A, read in conjunction with 101 and 102, which...
I'm sorry, the question I'm asking you is not about 103. The question I'm asking you is, how do we know that your construction of the treaty is correct?
This is the Department of Commerce's interpretation of the treaty, which goes back to...
Well, there's no Chevron deference to treaty interpretation.
Sure, but it goes back to, if we look at the preamble, the 1997 preamble to the regulations... there, the Department of Commerce talks about 19.3, or implementing 19.3 with expedited review regulations, and then specifically contrast that with new shipper reviews, which are on the anti-dumping side in Article, I believe it's 9.5 of the anti-dumping agreement. And the Senate report, as well, when we look at the legislative history of the URAA, the Senate report talks about how 19.3 is expedited reviews and requires a change in the Department of Commerce practice. So there are, in addition to the SAA, which talks specifically about expedited reviews, and if I'm understanding the question correctly, It's the question is, where does it talk specifically about expedited reviews as opposed to new shipper reviews?
The question is, you're interpreting 19.3 of the treaty as providing for individual examination after the fact, even for entities that are not new shippers, correct?
Correct.
And the question is, what supports that interpretation of the treaty?
Well, if we're looking at the treaty, I would point to the contrast between 19.3 and the anti-dumping agreement, which has new ship reviews. And if we look at the statutory framework as well that was implemented under the Act, under the anti-dumping statutes, there are provisions for new ship reviews. I believe this is 1675. It's actually with reviews. And there's a specific statutory framework for new ship reviews. And the companies that are eligible for a new shipper review are distinct from those that are eligible for an expedited review. Because a new shipper has to be someone that did not export to the United States during the period of investigation. An expedited review...
It's true that the regulations distinguish between those two.
But well...
I'm saying, how do we know that the treaty is correctly interpreted to be referring to individuals... Our entities not individually investigated, apart from new shippers.
Well, in the SAA, which is the authoritative interpretation of the treaties, the language in B5, and this is, I believe it's 923 of the SAA, is section B. 941 is B5. But there it talks about, or it provides for an expedited review of shippers or firms that were not investigated for reasons other than not cooperating. A new shipper could never have been investigated at all because it didn't ship during the period of investigation. Only an exporter that shipped during the period of investigation could have been investigated. So there's, in terms of the language of 19.3, that is pretty similar.
It couldn't be an entity that failed to cooperate.
It couldn't be an entity... A new shipper is someone that didn't...
A new shipper couldn't be an entity that failed to cooperate
correct.
In the original investigation.
Correct. And it couldn't be investigated either, because a new shipper hasn't shipped, or doesn't ship during the period of investigation.
Okay. Do you want to save the rest of your time?
I'd like to ask a question. I'm surprised that in your responses to Judge Dyke, you don't say anything with respect to the agreement of subsidies and countervailing measures that was also explicitly incorporated by Congress. And there they do speak about an expedited review.
Yes, that's in 19.3, and Article 101 of the URA specifically approves the subsidies agreement as well. So it's not only the SAA that's approved, but also the SCM agreement.
Right. So, Mr. LaBelle has 1 minute here.
Thank you for letting us speak, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Ed Lebo, and I'm here on behalf of several of the small lumber mills that have used the expedited review process in this investigation, which the trade bar refers to as SL5. And that number is important and significant, because it's in that context of longevity that I want to emphasize just one point, and that's regarding congressional acquiescence. Softwood lumber cases have been going on for many decades, and as our briefs and as Mr. Leonard have noted, there have been exclusion provisions in place both under the old and current law. And as the Supreme Court stated in the Bob Jones University case, it's hardly conceivable that Congress was not abundantly aware of what was going on.
I want to try to interrupt you.
Sure.
Could you, after reading the Federal Register notice of the launch of this investigation, have sought to participate in the investigation and gotten all this taken care of before the January 3rd, 2018 order?
That's a good question, Your Honor, because it points out specifically the change in the overall law which the expedited review provision is part of.
Right. What about an answer to the question?
Yeah, sure. The answer is no, because or theoretically, yes, but the Commerce Department chooses the four largest companies that are exporting in order to do the company-specific countervailing duty rates. Then they take the weighted average. They call it, create an all-others rate.
Does Commerce refuse to allow other people to be individually investigated when they made such a request? It's just Your Honor.
I cannot say that, Your Honor. I don't think anyone even made the request because it was so contrary to typical Commerce policy at the time, which everyone is aware of, that under the new law, they do companies specific rates. And then the expedited review procedure is a way for the smaller companies that weren't subsidized to get their own rates after the main investigation is completed. Whereas under the old law, they did a, sort of a national rate and had a provision for exclusion as part of the initial investigation. You had to file a request within 30 days of initiation under the old law. But under the new law, it specifically provided the provision. And
people, I'm sorry, by new law, you mean new regulation?
Yes. Right. Under the new regulations pursuant to...
Which is the issue, right?
Yes.
The entire issue here.
Yes, yes,
sir. What you relied on is that you had a regulation creating domestic law out of something it understood to be an international obligation without Congress having specifically said on this specific subject, we want this to be domestic law.
Correct, that's, Your Honor. Right. But the way the fast track process works is that Congress has to vote up or down on an entire package, which includes the Statement of Administrative Action and the legislation. And historically, and in this case as well, there are some changes to match the international obligation, which are done by legislation or by specific statute, and some are by regulation. That's what we were pointing to in our argument in Best Foods was.
The SSA is viewed as a statute. I mean, it's got the force of law.
Yes, I don't want to take that statement too far. I'd like to be able to agree with you completely, but it's a kind of a hybrid, but it's incorporated by reference in the Uruguay Act and 102D and 101A2 as being the expression of Congress's interest and understanding of how the international agreement works. And the international agreement required for expedited reviews, which in the context of individual company rates had to be company-specific expedited reviews.
But what about the agreement on subsidies and countervailing measures? To what extent is that incorporated, and what's its effect as force of law?
Sure. The SCM is listed precise in the SAA as one of the international agreements which is being incorporated by reference, and the U.S. obligation under the SCM is precisely what we're talking about here. In order to keep U.S. law consistent with international law and with our international obligations under Charming Betsy and otherwise.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Leonard, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Lynn?
Good morning. My name is Sophia Lin. I'm here on behalf of the coalition, and I'm from the law firm Picard Kenson Rowe. May I please the court?
Do we know why Commerce hasn't appeared in this case?
I believe that it might be because Commerce thinks that they have a very weak case. That's why they didn't appear.
Did they say that?
They did not say that. But that's what I choose to believe. Regardless of whether Commerce is here, we believe that the statute is unambiguous. And when the statute is unambiguous, that Congress did not intend to have expedited review as described in Commerce's regulation.
Subsection G of the SAA that I read to your friend on the other side?
Yep.
Which seems to be saying that we can have regulations that will implement international obligations. And that they find that in 103A.
Right, correct. But so the SAA is not law. It has not been passed by, it has not gone through the legal process to become.
Let's reserve that question for a moment.
Okay.
Reading the SAA, isn't my statement of what the SAA says correct?
The SAA, so I don't have it in front of me for that particular provision, But I think that the fact that the SAA says that means that Congress is prepared to, that's what Congress did in approving international agreements, that they are prepared to implement what Congress perceived to be the international obligations in U.S. law. And what Congress perceived to be the international obligation does not include CBD expedited review as described by Congress.
The part I read doesn't make any reference to statute. It says the administration will endeavor to amend or issue the regulations required to implement U.S. obligations. And then it says Section 103A of the bill provides the authority for such new or amended regulations.
Right. So, but
that would seem to suggest on the face of it that regulations can be issued to comply with international obligations.
Well, I guess I don't disagree with that interpretation.
You don't disagree with that.
I don't agree with that interpretation. Congress has been very clear that WTO agreements are not self-executing. So that means that whatever is in the WTO agreements, that doesn't matter if Congress
yeah, but, I mean,
didn't
we
put
have
it in
Best Foods, a similar provision which contemplates regulations to implement international obligations, right?
Right. Well, I'm very glad you mentioned Best Foods. Best Food does not apply here because in Best Food, like Judge Taranto mentioned, the issue was not whether the agency has authority, because the agency did have authority under the marking statute. The marking statute was broad in that it just says that any article of foreign origin needs to be clearly marked for the ultimate purchaser to indicate the country of origin for that product. And case law developed to define, the statute never defined what foreign origin or ultimate purchaser mean. So case law defines it to mean substantial transformation. Now, because of NAFTA, the agency developed a different definition for goods coming from NAFTA countries. And there, the Fed Circuit at this court held that that was okay because the agency already have authority to define the terms that Congress did not define. Here, there's no provision in...
That change was much more than just mere definition. Under NAFTA, the country of origin, rules were based on change in tariff classification.
Sure.
Whereas before it was something else. It was a substantial transformation.
Sure.
So we had a new system or a new rule adopted after NAFTA for the most extent with respect to the NAFTA contracting parties.
That's true. But the marking statute was broad enough, that's what the court found, that the marking statute was broad enough to encompass these two different types of systems. And the agency had authority to issue regulation because that statute was broad.
There were in place under statute laws with respect to countervailing duty matters.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Sorry, can you say that again?
Prior to the Uruguay Round Agreements Act, there were under U.S. law, in the mm-hmm. U.S. trade statutes, statutory provisions and also regulations that applied to countervailing duty matters.
Correct?
Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So Congress had this process. The Canadian parties actually mentioned this argument for the first time in their reply brief, that Congress had a process that was similar to CBD expedited review, pre-URAA. And they said that, you know, that practice was also not provided in the statute, and it was a purely agency practice. But that, in fact, is not true. Congress actually passed an amendment in 1984,
just to be clear, on the state of, as this case comes before us, mm-hmm. there is no authority except with the possibility, which is what's at issue here, 103, for this regulation. There's mm-hmm. no other authority. We take it on that assumption.
Yes.
Okay. So, and 103B, at least as I read it, is not terribly helpful to the other side because the SA did not, in fact, propose this mm-hmm. in the SA. What's left, I don't mean to diminish it, is 103A. And the facial problem for the other side with 103A is that what it says is that the government can adopt regulations necessary to ensure that any provision of the Act or amendment of the Act, not the agreement.
Right.
So to get to where they want to get, they have to say, and I'm not being skeptical about this at the moment, there are actually other pieces of the Act in 101 that say we're approving the treaty and we're approving the SAA.
Right.
So I think the theory is Congress meant at least the provision that approved the SAA to include, to be included in the 103A authority. And if that's what it comes down to, why is that wrong?
Well, so the other side is trying to say, well, because they approved the SAA and because they approved the subsidy agreements, that means that it opens a door for Commerce to interpret the international obligations however it wants. And that is not
only,
the case.
Only consistent with what it said. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean more than the SAA itself said. And what the SAA said, if I recall right, was that even though it wasn't in the SAA saying it was proposing this regime, it under the SAA said, we think this regime is necessary under the agreement.
Right. So the SAA, so yes, that's also another point, that the SAA did not say that Congress understood CBD-XY review as described by Commerce's regulation is part of United States obligation under Article 19.3.
No, it doesn't say that, but it does seem to say that if it is part of the international obligation, the regulations issued under 103A can implement that provision.
Well, yes, but the SAA, but again, the SAA, the Congress has been clear the WTO agreements are not self-executing. If we're reading the SAA saying, yes, Commerce can go in and implement regulation as it interpret Article 19, international agreements, then that is essentially saying that WTO agreements can be self-executing because the agency can then just interpret the provision as the way they want it.
Making them self-executing.
Well, that is
you have to have a regulation. Is not the same as being self-executing.
Well, that is true, but Congress, the idea of implementing legislation is Congress understanding that, you know, whatever they believe to be the United States obligation should be in U.S. law. So if approving international agreements...
I'm sorry, but it seems to me it's narrower than that, because it would be a broader proposition mm-hmm. to if Commerce had said here, we now, and we've never said this in the SAA, think that 19 point whatever requires something and we're going to adopt a regulation. We don't have that case. We have the case where with the regulation, Commerce said we're going to have a regulation that implements something that in the SAA itself, which was approved by Congress, we said we think the agreement requires.
So
even though it wasn't proposing it.
Right, so the SAA only mentions, SAA just repeats the language of Article 19.3. It doesn't say that it understands CBD-XY review to be part of that obligation. Actually, it shows the opposite. The SAA shows that Congress says, we know that we have this obligation, we're going to change U.S. law to implement these obligations, and it goes on to list, you know, all the changes of the presumption from a countrywide rate to an individually examined rate. And that was it. There's nothing about the type of CBD-XY review process Commerce understood.
Does it not extend to the administrating authority the authority to implement the Uruguay Round agreements?
No. so
really? Well, who administers a URA?
So
who administers, for example, countervailing duty cases?
Well, Commerce administers countervailing duty cases, but the URAA encompasses a lot of different agencies. Jurisdiction. So it has, you know, there's Commerce, there's ITC.
But
it's
not reasonable to say that the Federal Trade Commission can exert authority under this to say to implement a regulation affecting subsidies and countervailing duty matters. That's not reasonable. The administrating authority under the SSA is the Department of Commerce.
The administrator, so if we're talking about who to interpret the statute.
Who administers the processes that were agreed to? And here, one of the processes agreed to is a subsidies and countervailing duties agreement.
Sure.
Right?
Yes.
And that agreement speaks about expedited reviews.
That agreement mentions the words expedited review, but there's no evidence by mentioning those words, it means what Commerce believes.
But Commerce has the authority under the agreement to implement the WTO agreements.
Commerce has the authority to implement whatever that's in the implementing statute. Commerce does not have the ability to implement WTO agreements as it is written. The idea of the reason that Congress implemented the implementing legislation and the fact that it was thousands of pages, not just one provision that says we approve the SAA and we approve the WTO agreements, is because Congress meant to has to transform whatever Congress believed to be the United States obligations under these international agreements into implementing legislation.
Well, suppose you're wrong about that. Let's just suppose hypothetically that we think there is authority in Congress to issue regulations implementing the international obligations, even if there isn't a specific statutory provision. Does 19.3 of the treaty, in fact, provide for individual examination and expedited review of that request?
Well, I mean, I don't believe that's the case. I mean, the Article 19, what we say is different countries have different understanding of what Article 19.3 actually requires. Taiwan understand, for example, that the Article 19.3 means new shipper review. And again, agencies are creatures of...
give much weight to Taiwanese interpretation of the treaty. Where do we find a U.S. interpretation of 19.3 that supports your view?
Well, so in the statute, it says, in the statute, Congress did not implement anything in regards to the type of CVD expedited review described by Commerce. In the SAA, Congress said, we know that there's the obligations under Article 19.3, and here are things that we are going to do to change that. And then none of that includes CVD expedited review. Even in the Senate report that the Canadian
party... You keep ignoring, and you're doing it again, that there's a third element here, and that's the agreement itself, the subsidies agreement.
Correct, but the subsidy agreement is not binding on this court, and is not
itself domestic law.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it can be a theoretical exercise here to describe to sort of debate out what Article 19.3 actually requires, but Article 19.3 is not U.S. law and has not been passed by Congress and has not been signed into law by the president. The implement legislation has, and the implementing legislation says nothing about the type of...
Are we signatories to that agreement?
We are signatories to that agreement, and of course, Congress approved those agreements.
And does the SSA reference the agreement?
The SSA referenced that agreement, but again, the SAA is not an authorizing document in and of itself.
Except that the SAA was approved by Congress, right?
Correct.
Is that 101-2 or something? A2?
That's 101-A2.
A2,
but just
right.
By approving the SAA, Congress did not turn SAA into U.S. law. SAA is not part of the U.S. code. The implementing legislation is. And the implementing legislation says nothing about, and it does not have any ambiguous language about CVD expedited review. Congress, that's the United States interpretation of Article 19.3. Now, the Canadian parties can disagree with that.
Here's what 101 actually says.
Mm-hmm.
And it's talking about the entire Omnibus Trade and Competitiveness Act of 1988. It goes on citing the Trade Act of 74, taking us back into the history of U.S. trade law. It says, Congress approves, number two, the statement of administrative action proposed to implement the agreements that were submitted to Congress on September 27, 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Is that is that an approval of the subsidies or countervailing duty agreement?
That is an approval of subsidies and countervailing duty agreement, but the interpretation of that approval does not mean that it turns every single word of the essay of the subsidies agreement into U.S. law.
We're not, but this case isn't about that. It's not about the entire agreement. It's about the statement that it has about expedited reviews.
Correct. But then again, the essay, so.
If the U.S. agreed to an expedited review process, then doesn't Commerce, isn't it incumbent on Commerce to implement regulations to bring us into line with that obligation? That's an international trade obligation that we committed to.
We committed to what we believe to be the international obligation under Article 19.3. And Congress understood that to not include CBD expedited review. And other countries disagree about what what Article 19.3 actually requires. And what we have shown here is that there's nowhere in the statute that says that Congress understood that CBD expedited review is part of the United States obligations.
Okay. Unless there are further questions, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Lynn. Mr. Leonard, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to point out the U.S. interpretation can be found in litigation that occurred over expedited reviews in this super calendared paper case. This was before the Court of International Trade. It can be found in Appendix 764 and page 15 of our reply brief. And I'd also like to mention again regarding the action
can I just ask, because this is, like, to me, the heart of this. I'm trying to understand what to make of 101A2.
101A2.
Congress approves the statement of, I pause here for a reason, administrative action proposed to implement the agreements. Why should that not be limited to the specific proposals made in the statement of administrative action with respect to 19.3, sure, which do not include, assume with me that the proposals do not include this expedited review. Only a recognition, a statement of recognition that 19.3 requires it. So if 102A2 is limited to only the proposals that are in the statement of administrative action, then why isn't the CIT right?
There are two things. Number one is, I believe in Section 101, when it talks about the SAA proposed, it's because it was part of the package under Fast Track given to Congress.
It's required to have said exactly this under 2903.
Yes.
And 2191.
Right. So the SAA was proposed to Congress, and Congress approves it. And then in 103B...
I'm sorry, no. Congress did not approve the statement of administrative action as a document of 1,000 pages with every sentence in it being approved. This is... Maybe it did, but the alternative is reading this language quite literally. What we're approving is the statement of the actions proposed in that document,
sure,
which do not include an expedited review regulation.
Okay. And respectfully, I disagree that expedited review regulations are not proposed.
Okay, but if your case turns on that, then you have a much weaker case than I think the main case that you're making.
There are two bases, and Congress raised both of these. Number one is under 103B that the statement of administrative action
proposes. Right, I know you're
proposes.
Going to 103B.
And 103A is that the URAA adopts the subsidies agreement and adopts the SAA and makes the SAA authoritative in terms of the United States interpretation of the treaties and the act. And so the authority that Commerce has to issue the regulations comes not only from the listing of actions proposed in the SAA, but also from the approval of the agreements by Congress. And a note, in Best Foods...
I'm sorry, what does the approval of the agreement do for you that this other thing does not do for you?
The approval of the agreement indicates Congress's consent or intent that
the U.S. be internationally enforceable.
That the U.S. obligations under the agreement be implemented into U.S. law, whether by statute or by regulation. And in best
view, but it doesn't, just to be clear, it's absolutely clear, it does not make the agreement itself on its, the agreement itself enforceable as domestic U.S. law.
The agreement is not self-executing. And I don't think that that's controversial.
It's
at all.
Only the implementation Congress made for any choices it made to implement that then become enforceable domestic
yes,
law.
By statute or via regulation. Right. And in Best Food, the court said, we reject Best Food's argument that the fact that Congress amended 19 U.S.C. 1304 in one respect, not pertinent here, indicates that it did not intend to change or permit the Secretary of the Treasury to change the operation of the statute in other respects. So this is similar where here we have in the actions proposed under B5, and it talks about country or company-specific rates and expedited reviews, and it talks about several changes that are required to implement those. The changes, the statutory changes, are the ones that are required to change from a company-wide or country-wide rate to a company-specific rate. Just because there were no statutory changes required to implement expedited review regulations doesn't mean that Congress didn't intend the Secretary of Commerce to have those authorities.
Unless there are further questions, I think we're out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. Thank all counsel. The case is submitted.